How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 37 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head out to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can also leave a review as well. Find us on audioboom.com too. You can go to normantranscript.com to follow my Thunder coverage there. Today's Locked On Thunder is brought to you by SeatGeek. You download the mobile app for the easiest ways to buy tickets and enter the promo code LOTHUNDER, all one word, and it gets you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. I'll tell you exactly how you can do that later in the show. Remember, I'm on Tuesdays and Thursday mornings. That's for the next week or two after that. I'm back on daily like I was earlier in the summer, Monday through Friday, starting in the middle of the month, which is really soon. Basketball soon. Who's getting pumped? Who's getting pumped for basketball? Going to be previewing the team from a fantasy basketball perspective with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball in just a moment. I promise I won't sing with him like I just did. But first, let's talk about some actual basketball. No fantasies, real basketball. I actually stopped playing fantasy sports this year. I've been in the same fantasy football league since like eighth grade, and this is the first year I'm not doing it, and I think my friends are upset with me. But I'm dropping fantasy baseball after this year. I hope no one from my fantasy baseball league listens to this podcast, because this is the first time they're hearing that. And I dropped fantasy basketball, and I'm dropping fantasy football, and I'm getting into the real world. No more fantasy. I don't do daily fantasy. I'm done. I'm on real sports now. I'm over. So the real stuff. I'm really interested to see what the Thunder transition defense is going to look like this year. It's going to be really, really impactful on this year, what that transition defense is going to look like in the upcoming season. I've got a piece on normantranscript.com. You can go check that out on my blog. Actually, I've got two pieces out there. Check that out on my blog. It's called Thunder Road. It's you can just find it on normantranscript.com. Just go to the sports tab and click on Thunder Road there under the sports tab, and you'll be able to find it. I think the Thunder are going to be really good on defense overall. The half-court D it's really good. They're going to rotate well. Adams is going to have a great year. I think Oladipo is actually going to fit well into a defense that I think is going to be aggressive and try to get steals and try to get out in the break. And I think they're going to be good in offense on transition. I think Robertson is a really disciplined defender and is great guarding screens and is really good guarding the ball. And he's become just one of the absolute best perimeter defenders in the league, and he's just really good at that. And I think Steven Adams is going to be able to cover up lots of mistakes that guys make on the perimeter and be able to recover on a lot of those gambling plays that maybe Oladipo makes or that Russell Westbrook is prone to making. And I think it's going to be a top 10 half-court defense, and I actually think it's going to be a top 10 overall defense. But transition could end up being a struggle. So Thunder led the league in offensive rebound rate last year. So that's a simple stat. It's just the percentage of available rebounds that the Thunder got. And they were got around 31% of them, best in the NBA. They were great at it. They were the best in the entire league at it. They also chased the second most offensive rebounds of any team in the league. So their strategy was pretty easy to figure out. Take advantage of their best traits on the offensive boards. They just take advantage of it and go wild going for offensive rebounds. And this year they have a roster that promotes that even more. But when you're going for offensive boards, you're going in the opposite direction of when you're getting back on defense. And I wonder how this is going to affect the transition defense. I mean, look, there's a reason that we've seen over the last 10 years, 15 years, we've seen teams shy away from offensive rebounding. It's just not the priority that it used to be in the league. And you can look at that. You look at the offensive rebound rates, you know, from 20 years ago, and you look at them now, and it's amazing how much higher they were. It's because teams were prioritizing it. Now, they prioritize getting back on defense. We used to talk about follow your shot. Follow your shot's not actually good advice. Like, it's, you don't want to teach 10-year-old kids to always follow their shots, because you're also telling them they got to get back on defense. And those are two conflicting ideals. They're two conflicting philosophies. You want them to be smart about when they go for their shot. Now, that's hard to do. But the Thunder chase a lot of offensive rebounds, and they've got guys like Enes Kanter. Enes Kanter chased more offensive rebounds than any player in the league last year. And that's not me just blindly saying that on eye test. That's according to Nylon Calculus's very reliable rebound stats, which say that Enes Kanter chased more offensive rebound opportunities than any other player in the NBA last year. And there's a reason that when Enes Kanter's on the floor, the Thunder transition defense struggles. There are also the moments where Russell Westbrook darts up really quickly for, you know, layups and falls down and goes beyond the stanchion, and guys get back and they got a 5-on-4. You know, the Thunder defense, which was really, really, really good in the playoffs and carried them to a 3-1 lead against the Warriors, if that defense had an issue, it was transition defense, right? I mean, the Spurs got to them. They got to them a little bit. Danny Green was able to get three and hit a lot of threes in that Western Conference semifinal series. You know, Stephen Curry was able to find space, and that's Curry. And Thompson was able to find space, and that's Thompson. I mean, these guys are elite three-point shooters, and Danny Green is one of the best two-way transition players in the league, because he's a tremendous transition defender as well. And he's great at being able to sprint to the three-point line and get open for three-point shots and make three-point shots coming off of, you know, stationing his feet and finding balance and making those three-point shots. He's really good at that too. He's one of the best transition players in the league. But they were able to take advantage of that because the Thunder allowed them to. The Thunder didn't get back great in transition. And last year, the Thunder were 15th in the NBA in points allowed per possession in transition opportunities, according to NBA.com. I wonder if that's going to go down. I mean, you look at the big men on this team, and there are just guys who are really good offensive rebounders. I mean, Adams is relentless. Kanter is about as good as it gets. Sabonis is going to be a good offensive rebounder. Collison, if he's going to play, is good at it. And it's not just the bigs. I mean, Robertson was one of the best offensive rebounding wings in the league last year. Russell Westbrook is the best offensive rebounding guard in the league. And you could just see a scenario in which they go all in on offensive rebounding, because especially since there isn't really a secondary creator behind Russell Westbrook. I mean, there's Victor Oladipo, but there's not a wing who can create. And because of that, they need to find some other somewhat unconventional way, a secondary way to score points, and that could be second chance points. Because of that, they could go all in on offensive rebounding. And I don't think that's the wrong strategy. That's how this roster was built. It's just a ton of really good offensive rebounders at every position. That's kind of the way you have to go. But that could come in spite of good transition defense. We could see a lot of fast break points against this team. And it's not just about the fast break. It's also about the secondary break. That area, if like, you know, the 10 to 17 seconds left on the shot clock, which doesn't mean you're scoring in fast break opportunities, but you're getting down to the floor quick enough to where, you know, there's a matchup. All of a sudden, you got Steven Adams having to guard, pick up a perimeter player in transition because someone didn't get back in time. Or you've got Russell Westbrook having to pick up a big because somebody didn't get back in time. And that, you know, they feast, offenses feast on those mismatches. If you're starting with a mismatch, you're going to be in trouble on defense. And I just wonder, how that's going to go. I don't think it's going to kill them this year. I think they're still going to be a top 10 defense. I mean, saying all along, I think they're probably like the 8 to 10 range in defense. I think they're going to be a really good defense. And I think a lot of that has to do with how good Steven Adams is going to be in the half court. How good Steven Adams is just in general. But this is a team that's going to struggle in transition defense, I think. I think that's a reasonable prediction. And it's going to be an interesting trend to follow if they ease up on the offensive rebounds, if the transition defense really ever gets to be that much of a problem. We're going to be getting to the fantasy basketball preview in just a moment. But first, don't you always get pumped when one of your fantasy guys comes into town when you get to see him play in person? So you search for tickets to Thunder games, so you try to get to see him. You walk into the Peak, and like the rest of us, you're wondering if you actually got the best deal on your ticket. Well, SeatGeek can help prevent that feeling. SeatGeek is an easy, mobile-friendly experience. You just have to download the app. Again, SeatGeek. And the ticket's right there. You walk to the gate with the barcode. Like, it's on your phone. It's super easy. There's a rating on every ticket. It's 1 to 100, a language we all speak. It'll tell you, you know, what kind of bang for your buck that you're getting on your ticket. Plus, there's an easy way to save some more money. This is the important part, so just make sure you listen closely. You go to the settings tab on the app. You click on enter promo code and you type in my promo code, LO Thunder. That's one word, LO Thunder, LO, like locked on, to get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. And if you want to know if there are any deals to Thunder games or Sooner games that you're missing out on this fall, you can sign up for price alerts for certain events. Those are going to let you know pricing. And more importantly, they'll point out those moments leading up to events when prices actually start to drop and you can nudge your way in there and you can actually get a better price on a ticket than you thought you would originally. And SeatGeek's going to make sure to let you know what's in your selected price range on top of that. And remember, you get that $20, you get those $20 back if you just go to the setting tab, enter promo code, and you type in the letter O, the letter L, the letter O, and Thunder, like Locked On Thunder, and you get that $20 back on your first purchase. There's no more wondering what if when you think you may have overpaid for a game. Use SeatGeek, and that fear is now gone. And even better than fears leaving, we've got someone joining. Quick message, and then I'm splicing in my podcast, my Thunder Fantasy Basketball 3 preview with Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Enjoy.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
For today's team preview podcast, we're going to be looking at one of the most intriguing teams, I think, in the NBA, given all that happened to them in the offseason, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder. And to speak about everything that went on with the Thunder and everything in Oklahoma City this past offseason and for this coming season, I'm joined by Oklahoma City Thunder beat writer from the Norman Transcript and the host of the Locked On Thunder podcast. You've heard him in plenty of different places, Fred Katz. Fred, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, of course. What's going on?
Not a lot, just churning through these podcasts, actually recording four of these today, so I've got a lot of stuff happening today. They're all not going to come out at once, but we've got a lot of information happening at the moment. I think this is one of the teams that a lot of people will be wanting to hear about because there's a fair bit of uncertainty about how this Thunder team's going to look, and you've joined the Thunder beat at a very interesting time.
Yeah, I mean, look, so think about all that's changed in the last 4 months between them kind of having a disappointing regular season and then turning it on and beating the Spurs and becoming, going up 3-1 on the Warriors and looking like legitimate contenders to win the whole darn thing, and then blowing the 3-1 lead and losing Kevin Durant and then re-signing Russell Westbrook. I mean, it feels like there's a new major storyline coming out on this team every week at this point, and it's kind of amazing that there's been like a 1 month break where there just hasn't been anything huge on this team at all.
Yeah, you've got your work cut out for you in terms of just interesting stuff, I guess. And you're not going to be, and as a reporter, you must be loving the different narratives that are going to unfold throughout this season and the different angles you're going to be able to take with all the stories that could potentially happen, because it's as unknown as any team in the NBA at the moment, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, look, as a reporter, people think that we have rooting interests, and we do, but it's never actually the rooting interest that people think. Like, it's not that we're rooting for one team to lose or one team to win or one player to do well or one player to do poorly. We just want stories, right? We want good stories to tell, and I think there are a lot of good stories on this team. There's certainly a lot of good personalities. Like, anytime you get to cover Steven Adams, you're gonna get some good stories and some good quotes, like the one that you started us off with.
Yep.
So yeah, I mean, there are certainly some things to cover on this team.
All right, so let's get stuck into it, because we've got some questions. And what I'm doing through all these teams, and we've got this on articles written over on Basketball Monster, myself and Kyle and Matt over on the side have asked each other three questions about each team. So I'm turning those three questions and asking the team-based expert, which is you in this case, Fred, those same three questions. So let's start with the first one. Victor Oladipo, does he establish himself as the second offensive threat on this team, and does he take a pseudo Kevin Durant-ish type role as the second go-to scorer?
I'm going to have a Clintonian response. I'm going to say it depends on what the definition of pseudo is.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's going to be the second scorer on the team. He kind of has to be. He has to be that second ball handler. I don't think there's really a second. If he's not, there's not really a secondary creator on the roster behind Russell Westbrook, unless you think Cameron Payne is just going to have an absolute, breakout season in comparison to an inconsistent rookie season in which he was kind of hurt and in and out of the rotation the whole time. So, I mean, I don't think he has any other choice. I think Victor Oladipo has got to take over as the second scorer. And if he gets off to a slow start, or maybe doesn't have as good of a year as the Thunder hope for whatever reason, I don't think the Thunder have any choice of getting away from him, because this is a team that just doesn't have a wing who can create. I mean, you look at the wings on the roster, and they're guys who have particular skills. You know, Anthony Morrow is a really good shooter. You know, Andre Robertson is an excellent defensive player. But there's no one who you could give the ball to and ask to create a shot for himself or for somebody else. You know, even if Kyle Singler has a bounce back year, he's not someone who's going to create a shot. He's, you know, a shooter. So, I mean, there's not that wing. So it's got to be Oladipo. And because of that, he's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. And, you know, the counting numbers, I think, are going to come.
I think he's going to have a huge season, to be honest, from a fantasy point of view. I thought he was going to be a top 20 guy last season, but unfortunately he was paired with the worst coach in the NBA. Well, actually, that's unfair because Kurt Rambis was in the NBA, but Scott Skiles really ruined him to start the season. But he finished the season on a massive tear, Oladipo. He was a top 10 player for the last month of the season. He was a top 15 guy after the All-Star break. In fact, his last 3 months, he averaged almost 19 points, but 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, and shot 47% from the field, which is a huge upgrade in his shooting. Now, it's not a huge sample size, 35 games, but that increased efficiency. Is that something that when you've looked at his game over that second half of the season, when he was really on fire for that team, can he carry that sort of increased efficiency over now heading into his fourth season?
I think the issue with him for efficiency might just be the spacing on the rest of the Thunder roster. I don't think there's going to be a lot of shooting around him. So I think, and now granted, that was the same issue in Orlando. There was not a lot of shooting on that roster. The best shooters in Orlando were their bigs, which was, you know, an interesting thing. And aside from Evan Fournier, he wasn't playing really with many shooters either in Orlando. So this is certainly something he's used to. I don't know if the efficiency of the second half of last year is going to come, but I do think he's going to have a more efficient year than he did last year on the whole. Even if his usage takes an uptick as a secondary guy on a team, I think the Thunder are going to give him a lot of responsibilities. I think he's going to be a go-to guy, which they're going to try to create ways to make him more efficient. I think he'll be able to get to the rim well enough, even if, you know, defenders are collapsing in on him. And I think just natural development's going to come. I think he's a really good talent with a good work ethic, and he's 24 years old. And I think it's fair to expect some amount of natural development that you just find in a 24-year-old.
He's improved his three-point percentage each of the years in the NBA, went from 33 as a rookie to 34 in his second year to 35 last year, and as I said, ended the season shooting 41% across his last 12 games. I don't think he's going to be a 41% shooter, but you could see him, I can see him definitely going over that 35% just as he gets better. He's an aggressive rebounder. He's a good defender. You know, 2 steals a game is not out of the question. He's a really good shot blocker. His fantasy stats are out of control. To me, he's a top 20 player. He's a player that you grab at the end of a second round, and as you mentioned, they just don't have other options to be that guy. Now, I really like Campaign. I think he's going to be a tremendous player at some point in the future, but he's got, you know, coming off, well, he's recovering at the moment from a broken foot. He's in his second season. He's not a guy that they're going to say, you know, Donovan's not going to come in and say, oh, you know what, Oladipo's struggling, let's give Campaign 35 minutes tonight. I just can't see that being a realistic situation. So he's going to get minutes, and he has to produce, as you mentioned, and all those numbers I can see improving. He's a real breakout candidate to me. And look, he's a candidate to me to, if he had been in the Eastern Conference still this season, I think he would have been a real all-star candidate.
Yeah, I'm with you. From a fantasy perspective, he's going to put up numbers. Like we were saying before, the thing is, like, when we say he has to produce, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to come out and play great, because you hear people say all the time, so-and-so's got to step up. And that doesn't mean that they're going to step up, but when we're talking about actually fantasy and we get into the counting numbers and that kind of points and rebounds and assists and the stuff that actually matters in fantasy, which, you know, who cares if they matter on the court, but they do matter when you're putting together your lineups. Like, he's going to have those opportunities. If he gets off to a slow start, it's not like they're going to have a quick trigger. He's going to have those opportunities because there's no one else they're going to put in for him. And he was their big get. He was the big get in the Ibaka deal. He's going to have lots of opportunities to put up big numbers. He's going to have, I think, his usage is going to increase. He didn't really mesh well with Elfrid Payton in Orlando. That's going to be, you know, something. It's going to be a thing of the past now. You know, he's going to have those opportunities. And from a fantasy perspective, I think it'll probably end up being his best year because of that.
Yeah, I can't see a way that he doesn't have a career year here. But another guy, Fred, who is a player that had a big, not second half to the season, but a real breakout playoffs, and that is Steven Adams, who we've touched on already. He comes into this season, you know, really as a real hyped up player, a guy that the Thunder were confident enough to trade Ibaka away because they're thinking, Adams can take on a bigger defensive role. He can take on a bigger role in general. He's heading into his fourth season as well. Is his playoff in performance, is that real? Is that something we can expect over an 82-game season? Or is that something that maybe is a little bit too high of a level to expect from him?
I think it's reasonable to expect it. You know, if he were like 28 years old and had been in the league for 6 years and we'd seen the same caliber of play for him for 6 years and then we saw a good month from him, I would say, no, it's not reasonable to expect. But he just turned 23. He's progressively gotten better since he's been in the league. He's a wonderful talent. The Thunder have kind of coveted him as a really, really valuable talent for a few years. And the Thunder thought this was going to happen. Like Sam Presti and his front office, they thought Steven Adams was going to reach this level all along. They've been really high on him for all along. It's not just a coincidence that all of a sudden he's a really good player. I think that level of play is going to carry over for the regular season and into the regular season, I should say. And because of that, like, we're going to see a numbers increase, if only because the minutes are going to go up. I think he averaged like 10 and 10 in the playoffs. You know, obviously, he's a player who's better in real life than he is in fantasy. He's a really good athlete, but he's not an incredible shot blocker. He'll get his blocks, but he's a very good rim protector, but he's not an incredible shot blocker. Like, he's not going to, you know, he's not a Ibaka or anything like that. But he'll get rebounds, he'll get offensive boards. He'll you know, get his putback points. I think he'll touch the ball a little bit more this year and more than he did in the playoffs. So in that sense, maybe he averages a couple more points than he did. Maybe he's like a 12 and 10 player. You know, you can tell me if that's somebody worth drafting. But I think just because the minutes increase, we're gonna see an uptick in his numbers.
We've got him projected at 12 and 8 at the moment. The blocks is the interesting one to me because you mentioned he's not a great shot blocker, just 1.6 block shots per 36 last season. But without Ibaka there, someone is going to have to provide some sort of shot blocking weak side stuff. But there's no one else who really projects as being able to do that. So even though he's not a great shot blocker, I still imagine that his block rate actually increases because I think some of the time last season, he's playing his defense and doing his rim protection, and he knows that Ibaka's coming across to alter these shots and block them, but he doesn't have that level of comfortability with the other guys he's playing with, so he's going to have to try and get his hands on more shots. So I see that block rate increasing a bit this year. Is there any chance that you see in his game of him being a guy that maybe gets to two blocks a game, or is that just pushing it too far?
I think that's pushing it too far. I don't think it's really in his style to be a shot blocker. Now, I think from a basketball perspective, because I like to separate these opinions, because fantasy value and real-life value are very different things. I think he's a very good rim protector, and I think he's going to be a very good rim protector, and he'll probably get better because, again, 23-year-olds tend to get better when they work hard and play hard and are smart and are talented. They tend to improve because they're only 23. But he's just... He's never been a guy who's chased for blocks. He's a smart player. He uses verticality well. You don't see a lot of blocks on that kind of stuff. He's a quick helper, and maybe if he just becomes this incredibly sneaky, outrageously quick-moving, rotating help defender, maybe he sneaks some more blocks than I anticipate. But I don't think he's ever going to be a tremendous, like, you don't have to be a tremendous shot blocker to be a tremendous defensive big man or even be a rim protector. While I think he's a different style player than Marc Gasol, I think we're going to see that same type of thing where Marc Gasol is a great defensive player, doesn't get, you know, he's never going to lead the league in blocks. I think we'll see a similar type of thing from Steven Adams, even if they are stylistically different defenders, but I think that principle is going to stay the same.
Yeah, look, I don't think he gets to two blocks either. I was just throwing it out there, see if you had a differing opinion. But what he is in fantasy, his poor free throw shooting is going to be a real impact because you mentioned him getting extra touches. That's probably going to translate into a slightly higher free throw rate. He's a guy that he shot 58% last year, but post All-Star break, he only shot 52%. So it was a big decline in what he was able to do from the line. And that doesn't look like it. He hasn't really shown an ability to get better from the line throughout his career, which is a concern. And if the attempts go up, that makes him a guy that in fantasy, he projects as almost a punt free throw type of big man. Not quite to the Drummond and Jordan and Howard levels, but that Mason Plumlee, Clint Capella-ish type role where if you're not accounting for his free throw percentage, you're just going to end up losing that category. But he is a guy that he's a real solid top 100 type of player this year. Takes a big step forward, and I'm with you. I think that he the increased minutes, the increased responsibility, it's all going to translate into some decent numbers, and he's going to be a solid guy in those 7th, 8th, 9th round sort of area in a fantasy league. Billy Donovan, he's got a couple of decisions to make because we know Ibaka's gone, we know Durant's gone, so there's two openings in that starting lineup. I've got my ideas on what they do in this starting lineup, but who do they start in at the 3 and the 4?
So it's going to be, I mean, one of the new starters will be Oladipo, of course. Yep. And at the 3, I think they're going to go with Robertson. He's just, this team, I think its strength is going to be its defense over its offense, which is weird to say after losing Durant and Ibaka, that a team that was, you know, outside the top 10 in defense, that their strength is going to be their defense. But I think Adams is going to make that leap, and I think Robertson kind of fits with that mentality of kind of a defensive-minded, gritty mentality. There's just, I mean, look, if there was a really good wing on this roster who could play two ways, I would say that guy, but that guy doesn't exist. You know, maybe if Kyle Singler bounces back, he's the guy, but that's certainly not going to be the case right off the bat. He's going to have to prove it for a couple of months that he can have a completely opposite season of what he did last year before
What happened to Kyle Singler? He was good in Detroit, and then he moved to Oklahoma City, and it's like he forgets everything about how to play basketball.
I honestly don't know the answer to that question. Like, I'm watching the same stuff as you, but he got a 5-year contract because of his play in Detroit. And
he was a 40% three-point shooter from what I remember in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a 37% career shooter from three. Like he had a down shooting year last year in every sense. And the thing is, like, if he's not shooting, aside from the fact that he's pretty good at guarding the ball, he's not really going to provide much. At least on offense, he's not going to provide anything because he's not a ball mover. He's not a passer within the offense. He's not a creator, and he doesn't really create off the dribble. So if he can shoot and he can play some defense, that's a big deal for them. But and I think they're going to give him that opportunity to see if he can come back and maybe give him an 18-minute a night role. But you know, I don't know if it's going to happen. But I think they will, and they should give him the opportunity. I think the other starter is going to be Ilyasova.
Yep,
I just we talk about how there isn't any shooting. And I've banged this drum a lot this offseason that regardless of whether you think Ilyasova or Cantor is the better player, Ilyasova is just incomparably, in my mind, the better fit in the starting lineup. Because if you start Robertson, Oladipo, Westbrook, and Steven Adams, there's one thing that all four of those guys have in common, and it's that not one of them is an above-average three-point shooter for his position. And you need an above-average three-point shooter just so Westbrook and Oladipo can get into the paint a little bit easier. And if you're starting Cantor and you've got two bigs playing inside the arc with a guy in Robertson who defenders don't really guard and two guards who are penetrators over shooters, you're going to have spacing issues. And they're going to have spacing issues no matter what, but Ilyasova could do a little bit more to grease that just because he's a good three-point shooter. And I think you're going to see him in the starting lineup. Even if Cantor ends up getting a little more minutes, Ilyasova is just going to be the guy in the starting lineup, I think, because of that.
That's the exact way I see it playing out, that Ilyasova will start, but Cantor will get probably an extra 2 minutes or so over him. And that'll vary on what depends who they play, really. It depends on what the opposition is, depends how the game is looking, depends on a lot of different situations. You know, Cantor will obviously play the backup five also, but yeah, I see Ilyasova getting sort of, you know, low to mid-20s in minutes, and he becomes a deeper league fantasy guy because he hits threes. He's a pretty good rebounder, and his rebounding was depressed last season because he played alongside Andre Drummond, and whenever you play alongside Andre Drummond, your rebounding numbers come down. Like, Tobias Harris's numbers went down by like almost two boards per 100 possessions from memory just from playing next to Drummond. Now, Ilyasova's a guy in the past when he played for Milwaukee, he had some 20 rebound games, so he's a really solid rebounder. Adams is a good rebounder, but he's not a vacuum like Drummond is. Cantor's along those lines, but you're going to see a lot of Ilyasova and Adams together. So I think his rebounding comes up and he becomes that deeper league player, but I don't think he's a player that's really falling inside the top 150. Cantor, on the other hand, he doesn't need 30 minutes to become a fantasy player. He was a top 60-ish guy last season in like 21 minutes. And Fred, I have to think that his minutes are going to go up from what he played last year.
Yeah, I think that's plausible. I mean, they need some amount of offense in a lot of ways. And, you know, he's an incredible offensive player. He's amazingly skilled in every way. He has gorgeous footwork in the post, and he's got tons of moves, and he's so fluid. And, I mean, he's all the way down to the fact that he is a tremendous offensive rebounder. You know, he's maybe a little too aggressive of an offensive rebounder, but he's really good at it. Like, he led the league in offensive rebound rate last year. And if his numbers go up, I mean, look, if he averages, he's a guy who could conceivably average a double-double in, you know, 26 minutes a night if he gets that. I mean, he would have, it would be a tremendous rebounding season. But I think if he got that many minutes last year, he would have been pretty darn close to that. He averaged like 13 rebounds per 36 last year or something like that. So he's a tremendous rebounder. He's a really good scorer. I mean, we keep hearing every year that he's going to shoot threes. I think he's capable of it, and I think if there's a year that he's at least going to do it in the corners or something like that, it's this year. But at the same time, if you put him out in the perimeter, you're losing his offensive rebounding stuff, which I think is a big reason why he's hung around the basket a lot more. I think he could end up getting some more minutes just because they need some more offense. But at the same time, his fit on this team is a little strange because he's odd playing the four, because just defensively it doesn't work as well when you put him far from the basket. And he works better in a second unit where he can kind of be the guy on offense. You know, he can be the one holding the ball. He can be the one you're running your offense through. He's just better in that role. So I could see him in the mid to high 20s and getting an increase in minutes, but I could also see that falling back throughout the year if his numbers are really good and, you know, his on-off numbers just aren't good for the team when he's on the floor.
Yeah, that is a risk with him. But as I mentioned, even in 21 minutes last year, he was a comfortable top 100 player. So you grab him in the 60s or 70s, I don't think you've got too much to fear of him returning value similar to that. Yeah, he's not a great defender. His steals and blocks aren't great, but he still can get half of each of those a game. But you're drafting him for, you know, elite percentages, you know, really good field goal percentage, great free throw percentage, super rebounding. And if you count offensive rebounding, you mentioned it, Fred, you had a great article on this as well, that he is the best offensive rebounder in the league. He was last season. He just gets everything. His offense is tremendous, and he provides all those things. And it's hard to get a guy that can give you maybe 15, 16 points at the back end of a draft, and Cantor can be that sort of guy. He doesn't need 30 minutes. He doesn't need to start to be impactful. And then if for some reason the Adams gets injured and they have to play him 30 minutes, then you're talking about a top 30 type fantasy guy who could go out there and realistically get close to 18 or 19 points and 12 rebounds. And then the added volume on his percentages really helps in that area too. So he's got some downside, but there is also upside. And I'm pretty confident that he's going to be a solidish guy without being spectacular. And a lot of what he does fantasy-wise goes a little bit hidden because it's in his superb efficiency is where a lot of that value comes from. We touched on Robertson. He's going to start. Now, he saw a couple of games in the playoffs where he looked a little bit better offensively in terms of hitting some three-pointers and corner threes. But in the overall scheme of things, he only hit 32% in the playoffs. He hit 31% during the regular season. So it wasn't like it was a massive leap forward. Is he someone that you think could take a step and become an average three-point shooter? Or is it just the offense is just not ever going to come for him?
If he does, I'd be surprised. I mean, he could, because, again, I mean, the thing is with this team is that everyone's really young. So it's possible. And this is also an organization that's notoriously really good at developing young players, too. So it's plausible. If it happens, I don't think it's happening this year. From a fantasy perspective, he's not a guy who I think would provide value as a three-point shooter or anything like that this year, and it's not a good enough risk to take if you're in a keeper league or something like that. I mean, because it's not just like he misses shots.
No.
And it's not even just that he misses them badly. Like, it's not even that, like, he hits the side of the backboard from the corner a couple times every year. It's that his footwork's all off. It's really slow, his footwork. He doesn't line up his feet particularly well. And his release is, you know, a little funky too. So he's got a lot of things that he has to – he is working on them. It's not like he's not working on them. One of my least favorite things is when people say, oh, he's not shooting well and his shooting hasn't improved, so it must mean he's not working. If everyone can just shoot if they worked at it. If that were true, then I would have hit a three-point shot at some point in my life. And that's never going to happen. So – I mean, I just don't think it's going to happen. He's working at it. I don't think it's going to happen this year. If it does, then I mean, that's a massive improvement.
what he is an above-average rebounder for his position. He gets a decent amount of steals and blocks, and he can be useful on occasion in a fantasy situation where, you know what, my waiver wire is really thin. Who's going to get me rebounds, steals, and blocks? Who's not going to hurt me in percentages because he doesn't take enough shots to have any impact in those categories, despite being a 58% shooter from the line? He takes less than one a game, so it has no bearing whatsoever. But you can get a guy that maybe he gets you two steals, maybe he gets you a block, maybe he grabs you seven or eight rebounds. They're all the possibilities of what he can do. And because of what he does defensively and the guys behind him, like Morrow and Singler, he's clearly got that role locked up to me.
And he's also, just adding on, he's a guy who, if you're in a particularly deep league and you're looking at a guy like him, I think his percentages are going to stay pretty consistent because I think he's going to get a lot of points. He's good at running the floor, and he's good in transition. I think he's going to get a lot of layups and dunks in transition because Westbrook and Oladipo are going to get – this is a team that's going to run. Westbrook and Oladipo are going to gamble a lot. They're going to get a lot of steals. They're going to try to get out running. It's an insanely explosive and athletic backcourt, and I think Robertson is going to end up benefiting from that. So I think even if he misses shots in the half court, I think a lot of transition – well, I should say proportionally, a lot of transition opportunities are going to keep his percentages up, so it's not going to hurt you from a fantasy point.
On that, do you think that Thunder increased their pace this season?
Yeah, I do.
I do too.
I do. I think it's going to be a very strategic move. I think there are so many times where Westbrook walked the ball up last year, Kevin Durant walks the ball up, and, they try to put up a shot late in the clock, or they end up, with 12 seconds left on the shot clock, they just go to Durant ISO. And, I think those situations they're just not going to organically arise because Kevin Durant's not there, and they have an incredibly explosive backcourt that's incredible when they run. So I think it would be silly for them not to try to take advantage of that.
The NBA draft, the Thunder didn't have a huge night in terms of selections. They picked Daniel Hamilton in the second round, who's got zero chance of making this roster. He hasn't even been signed at this point. But we'll talk to Domantas Sabonis, who came across in the Oladipo trade, the 11th pick in the draft. I think, from my mind, he struggled a little bit in Rio at the Olympics. He's very, very one-sided, very left-handed. How does he fit into what they do? They're going to be able to ease him in, especially with the acquisition of Joffrey Lavernier. How do they use Sabonis, and how can you see his role developing as the season wears on?
I think he's going to play. He's a really good rebounder.
Yep.
That's a thing that usually translates pretty well. So, they have a lot of good rebounders on this team, and he's one of them. He is. He's very left-hand dominant. He doesn't have a right hand. But he's got good enough footwork to where I think he can make it work and find ways to creative ways to finish until he finally gets there, because he is really coordinated. I think he will develop a right hand at some point. He just doesn't have that right now. I think he's gonna play. My guess is he could be in and out of the rotation throughout the year early on or something like that, because he's a rookie, and that's what rookies tend to do, and that tends to be my expectation for pretty much any rookie who doesn't go in the top five or something like that. But I think he's probably going to settle in maybe a 15 to 20 minute a night role as the fourth big man on this team. With Laverne, after the Laverne trade, it makes things interesting because they have 16 guys who are on. Laverne is technically not guaranteed right now, but they didn't give up two draft picks so they could get him just so they could cut him. They got him so they could keep him.
I thought the Nuggets guaranteed his deal a couple of weeks before the trade. They might not have. I thought they did. He was non-guaranteed at one point.
They guaranteed half of his
deal. Okay, yep.
So half was guaranteed and then it fully guaranteed at the start of the season.
Okay.
And so they've got 16 guys right now who are, you can say, are guaranteed. And as you know, you can only have 15 of them. So they're going to make some move. Now, it could just be a fringe move of, Mitch McGarry for a second rounder or something like that. And it could be something bigger for all we know. But there's going to have to be some kind of move there. It's hard to figure out the big man rotation until we know exactly what that move is going to be. So just knowing what we know now, my guess is I feel like Sabonis is going to settle in at like the 15 to 20 minute a game marker. As a fourth big man behind Ilyasova and Kanter and Adams.
In terms of Sabonis' future, do you see him as being someone who can play alongside Adams? It's hard to say without seeing him actually meshing with this team and playing preseason, but do you think that he's got the skill set to play alongside Adams as a starting four?
Yeah, I think that's a plausible long-term scenario. I don't think the Thunder would have traded for him if they didn't believe that was the case. He's not a bad shooter. No. He's not a three-point shooter right now. He doesn't have NBA range. Or at least he didn't at Gonzaga, and he didn't show it with Lithuania during the Olympics. But I do think that's a goal that they have for him, to turn him into a guy who can shoot threes. Now, that doesn't mean that's a goal for him. If we're talking in the long term now. It's not a goal for him for 2016 or 2017. This is a goal for down the line. But I do think they probably view him as more of a four because he's not going to be a shot blocker. He's not going to be a rim protector just because he doesn't have the physical traits. He's not really long enough, and he's not really athletic enough to play that role, but I think he can be kind of a switchy enough defender to where he can play the four and get his feet. He moves his feet pretty well in the perimeter, so I think he can play that role and complement Adams nicely defensively. And if he can ever get 3-point range, then that's a guy who you can say, yeah, that's your guy next to Steven Adams. And if not, then maybe he's just a solid third big man.
When you're looking at a guy like Sabonis moving forward in dynasty type formats, to me, he projects as being a worse offensive Enes Kanter, like a really good rebounder, a guy that scores but provides nothing in the defensive stats, but he shoots a high efficiency from the field and shoots a really good free throw percentage. So being a big who can give you, you know, points, boards, field goal percentage, free throw percentage, and not giving you much in the defensive area, he projects as that sort of player. And, you know, getting into a starting role, that's enough to be a top 100 player at some point in the next, probably by the end of his rookie contract, he could be that sort of player. So he does have some significant upside, you know, moving forward, but that's what you should be expecting from him, I think, as we move forward throughout his career. Now, free agency wasn't great for Oklahoma City. We know that. We know Kevin Durant left. They lost Deion Waiters. I'm sure they're all, you know, torn up about the fact that Randy Foy and Nazir Muhammad are no longer on this team. And the only guy they brought in was Ronnie Price. So, in effect, the free agency wasn't a great win. Now, Price, he slots into the third point guard role. He is a break glass in case of emergency type of guy, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a guy who's getting meaningful minutes from a fantasy perspective. He's going to be behind Westbrook. He's going to be behind Payne. And if something terrible happens with Payne or Westbrook or something like that, they're going to give facilitating minutes and floor general minutes, you know, whether he's technically playing the one or not. They're going to give those ball handling duties to Victor Oladipo a lot of the time. So, you know, Ronnie Price is technically the third point guard, but he's really the fourth kind of floor general facilitator on this team if you include Oladipo.
Look, Ronnie Price should have been out of the league 3 years ago. So the fact that he's managed to stick around in Phoenix and Los Angeles and now get another contract, but he's not going to play. What about a breakout candidate, Fred? Who's someone? It might be someone we've already spoken about. Who's a guy, and you can frame it however you want, that's going to be a breakout guy this season?
I think the highest potential for that is probably Kanter.
Yep.
You know, if he, because look, when he came to Oklahoma City a couple of years ago, I mean, he was averaging like 18 and 12.
Monster.
And now that was when guys were hurt. But that's an amazing, you know, that's an amazing fantasy value if you can get him low. You know, I think he's going to be more playable this year because I think he's just going to be a better player. I thought he was better last year on defense.
He wasn't the worst big man defender. And people act like he's the worst big man defender in the history of the NBA. He wasn't the worst big man defender in the NBA last season.
No, he wasn't, because there are guys who both have no ability, they have the three terrible traits. They have no ability, they don't know what to do, and they don't play hard.
Yep.
Now Kanter doesn't have all those three. Kanter plays hard. And Kanter's problem, he can defend the post, and he's so big that he'll stumble his way into blocks sometimes because he's just massive. His problem is that he doesn't have the feet to defend in space. It's funny because you watch him on offense and he's so fluid and he moves so well, and then you watch him on defense and he just gets turned around so easily, and he gets on his heels too easily. He doesn't have the feet, and just he gets caught in the wrong place often. That's kind of his issue as an offensive rebounder too, when he doesn't really know when to go for an offensive rebound or when to get back on defense. And it's just he'll get caught in the wrong place too often. But he tries, and if you try, like, it's not going to make you a good defender. People play off too much. You know, the defense is all about effort, and that's it. And it's not true. But if you try, you're not going to be the worst defender in the NBA. And he tries. And I think if he makes himself into a more capable defender, all of a sudden it's more justifiable playing him 25 plus minutes. And when he gets those minutes, like, he's going to get rebounds and he's going to score. Like, he is really, really, really good at those two things. So, I mean, if you want him on your fantasy team, he's going to do it efficiently and he's going to hit free throws. And if, you know, he'll get some blocks every once in a while just because he's so large. So I think he's probably the guy. And if somebody gets hurt, all of a sudden he's playing 30 minutes, he's going to put up really big numbers.
Yeah, he's a top 30 player in that sort of situation. I've got a couple of questions on Kanter I'll get you to ask. First of all, what's his mustache situation looking like at the moment?
To my knowledge, he's got the same mustache he had last year. He shaved it in the offseason.
Yeah, and then, that's why I'm asking.
And he grew it back. Yeah, he grew it back, though.
He needs to go Freddie Mercury. He needs to go full Freddie Mercury and just get it really, really bulking up. The second question is, and a more serious one, is he, in terms of offensive big men, he's a top five offensive big man in the league in terms of just what he can do when he gets the opportunity. Like, Brook Lopez is there, Boogie Cousins is there, but is that sort of the range where you put him?
That's an interesting question. I think that's a reasonable take. I still think Al Jefferson is really good. I mean, are we talking about just like big men who are good around the post, or are we talking about like is Draymond Green a big man in this situation?
Let's just talk. Well, we'll talk post players then, because his post moves they're fantastic.
Yeah. So I mean, Blake Griffin I'd put in there. Blake is great when he's on the run and that kind of stuff. But I would put Blake Griffin in that scenario. And Kanter's in that conversation. If you're just talking about like post offense and who's got the best moves in those scenarios, I mean, he's so creative in the post. He's got about 48 different moves. He's so graceful as a post scorer, and he's got tremendous touch around the rim. I think he's a better shooter than people give him credit for too. He's a pretty good shooter. When you get him out into mid range, he's reliable. I would be confident in him taking those shots when he's open. He's a wonderful offensive player, and offensive rebounding is part of being an offensive player. And you know, he's about as good at that as there is in the league. So he's a wonderful offensive player. There's no question about that. The questions about him come on the other side of the floor.
One thing that's will always burn into my mind about Kanter is when he came across from Utah to Oklahoma City in his first game back playing against Utah. Obviously, the Jazz, they weren't happy with the way that he exited and some of the comments that he made. So they were targeting him pretty seriously. He had a play where they dumped it into him. Three Jazz guys ran over to him. He got them all up in the air on a shot fake. They came back down. I think he did it again. Then he just went up and under three different guys and put it in. And they're all just trying to basically just hack his head off. And he took three of them out and put it in. And it was just like, this is what this guy does on an offensive end. Like, three guys doing their best to hurt him and to stop him. And he still gets the shot up. And it looks perfect. Like, they weren't even there, basically. Like, he was three steps ahead of what he was doing footwork-wise. And that's how he can play. But obviously, the downside is that he can't do it on the other end. And that keeps him off the court. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just I'm wholeheartedly agreeing with you.
The player that everyone I think wants to hear about on this team from a fantasy point of view is Russell Westbrook. We've seen in 2014-15 when Kevin Durant was out with that broken foot that Westbrook was putting up historic sort of numbers. He had an historic season last season with Durant in the lineup in terms of his ability to rack up triple doubles. Now, people will come across to Basketball Monster, they'll go and have a look at the projections, and they see the associated rank, and they'll look at it in terms of with turnovers on, they'll say Westbrook's ranked ninth, and I've had a lot of questions, why are you ranking Westbrook ninth? I'm not ranking Westbrook ninth, I don't think he's the ninth best player, but the amount of turnovers that this guy gets, and he will likely get a huge amount again this coming season, and with the increased pace, that might even go up again, that's what bumps him down to ninth. He is not the ninth player, you don't take him ninth, he's a top three fantasy guy, but a lot of people were thinking he's going to be the number one overall guy in fantasy. And when Durant was injured last time, he wasn't the number one player in that stretch. And the Oklahoma City Thunder have come out and said that Westbrook is not going to go full hero mode like he did then, because the team is better because they've got Oladipo. Back then, there was Noah Barker, there was no Durant. It was Kanter and Westbrook. And in terms of Westbrook, Kanter's obviously a big, so Westbrook was doing everything on the perimeter. Now with Oladipo there, he's not having to go into that sort of role. So he's, I don't think we're going to see that same, you know, 40% usage that we saw after the All-Star break in 2015. I can't see him doing that. He is the third best player to me in fantasy. And don't, if you're worried about turnovers, you can't draft him because they're going to be sky high, but I would never worry about turnovers. And that's why he's down at 9, just because of the impact of turnovers and because of his field goal percentage. But is that the way that you see it? He's not going to be that 40% usage monster that he was in that 2-3 month stretch in 2015?
I actually totally agree with you. And I'll add on a couple of points as to why. Number one, that's just exhausting to do for an entire season.
Yep.
I mean, it's one thing to do it for 27 games or whatever he did it in 2015. It is exhausting to do for 82. It's so tiring. Number two, I think he's going to have to channel. Look, when he was putting up that 40% usage, and I forget what it was, but that a 40% usage would be, for reference of people listening, a 40% usage would be the highest usage of any player ever since the merger.
Yep.
Like that would be insane. Like the year that Durant got hurt a couple of years ago and he basically, you know, took over, he had the second highest single season usage ever behind Kobe in 05-06. I think it was 38.3%. So and that was on the whole year, and he was like 40% after the All-Star break. It's exhausting. And I think he developed as a basketball mind last year as a facilitator. I think he was so much better finding guys, and I just don't see that necessarily regressing. On top of that, when he was just kind of going nuts a couple of years ago, that team, that offense stayed pretty good. The defense was really and I think you can't channel that much, or at least I don't think he can channel that much energy into offense and still just be a bulldog on defense, which is something that we've seen from him the last couple of years. Now, I think he's probably going to put some more energy into defense, and because of that, he might have to give some extra possessions to Victor Oladipo, and that's fine. I mean, that's the way it should be with this team, which I think is capable of being a top-10 defense, and I predict will be a top-10 defense, and I think part of that is going to be because I think Russell Westbrook is going to up his game defensively after having a down year defensively last year.
Yeah, I heard you talking about that with Nate Duncan on the Dunked On podcast last week about what your thoughts on Westbrook and his defense. But yeah, he can't maintain that sort of usage. So for people thinking, yeah, he's going to average a triple-double, he's going to be 30, 10, and 12, he's just not – look, he might get close to that, but he's not going to be able to do that over the course of the season. Oladipo is going to take the load off to some degree, and he fits in really solidly as a top-four fantasy guy, and you know, the turnovers are still going to be a real concern, and that's something that, again, I – totally disregard when I'm looking at fantasy value. I do not care about the turnover set. It bumps him from the third player to the ninth player. That's how big of an impact, how bad he is in that turnover category. It's one of the biggest negative impacts that anyone has in any category outside of Drummond, Jordan, and Howard is Westbrook's turnover category. So that's why he's down so low. But otherwise, he's going to put up really good numbers. He's going to be a solid top four guy, probably a top three guy. Wouldn't fault you if you took him at one or two, but I still think that he's not going to be that insane guy that we saw for 2 months, where he literally, much like what we saw with Harden last season, at the end of the season, where Westbrook had to do everything, and Harden had to do everything at the end of last season, and he's just not going to have to do everything. The team is better now than what it was when Durant was out for that stretch, and that's going to allow him to pass his energy across the season, which is something that's, if the Thunder are going to make the playoffs, they absolutely need him to do. They can't have him average a triple-double for 2 months and then go down with some sort of wear and tear injury that's caused by overuse. They just can't afford that sort of thing to happen. So I'm glad that you agree with me there, Fred, because it's I've had a few arguments with people about that. I want to talk about Campaign, because he's one of my favorite players. He was one of my favorite players before the draft last season. I was horrified at the way that Donovan used him down the stretch in terms of the fact that Payne outplayed DJ Augustine, got into the starting, got into the backup role, and then when Randy Foy came across, Payne was taken out of the rotation, and then they tried to use Payne in the playoffs when he hadn't been playing for 2 to 3 months. We know he's got the broken foot, but he should be ready for camp. Do you see him getting a bigger role this season and playing alongside Westbrook and Oladipo quite a bit?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to give him an opportunity, I assume. I guess there's a chance that they take that opportunity away, because they gave him an opportunity last year, and then they kind of pulled that back. And I always thought, you know, you're on a team that's definitely going to win 50-plus games. They were kind of they were kind of penned into the three seed pretty early in the year after Blake Griffin got hurt. You kind of knew they were going to be the three, or at least the three and maybe the two, but probably the three once the Spurs just – you realize the Spurs were never going to lose ever. Yeah, they lost, what, 15 times last year.
Yep.
So once you kind of realize that there was such a split there, yeah, I agree with you. I think Donovan could have done a better job developing Cameron Payne, but let's not forget that he was hurt last year.
Yep.
That was part of the reason as to why he sat. When he wasn't, he was playing, but when he wasn't playing, he was walking around in a walking boot just for – they said, you know, just for precautionary reasons or whatever it is. But you know what? If there's no injury at all, then there's no need for a walking boot. There's something there if there's a walking boot, and there's something that can contribute to you not playing at your absolute top-tier level. So – I mean, I think Payne's a really good talent, too. He's a good athlete. I think he can develop into a good shooter off the dribble and a good creator. And he's small. He's put on some weight this offseason, which is something that can certainly help him as long as he maintains his quickness, which you have to believe he did because it looks like it's just muscle. But he's a scrawny guy. Like, he's still built like a kid, you know? He looks like a kid. Like, if you saw him on the street and you didn't know who he was, like, you'd think he was 14 years old. Like, he's got a baby face and scrawny body. I mean, he's tall. He's like 6'1", but he really looks like a kid. And that's something that, you know, he'll have to get used to, just kind of the banging around style of the NBA and that, you know, the toll that 82 games of that takes on your body and, you know, putting on that weight will help. But, you know, just anything consistent out of him would really be an improvement. I don't know if this is the year that he breaks out because he's still only 21 years old, and I like him as a talent, and I think he's going to be a good player. I don't know if the expectation of him as a breakout guy this year is a fair one. I think we need to see a consistent year before we call him a breakout guy, but I do think at least some amount of consistency, the ability to just stay in the rotation, stay as the reliable backup point guard, I do think that's a fair expectation for this year.
He's a guy that I think that at some point in his career in the next few seasons, he has the potential when he gets a starting role, whether that is if Westbrook ends up leaving or he finds himself in a Reggie Jackson situation where he's at the end of his rookie deal and he gets traded, that he's a top 50 fantasy talent. To me, he might top out at about 20 minutes a game this year, but again, it's just developing him and seeing what he can do, because when he gets the minutes, you're going to get really good assists, good scoring. I think the efficiency goes up. He's a solid-ish rebounder. He gets steals. He hit threes. He'll be a really solid top 50 fantasy point guard when he gets an opportunity. So in deeper leagues, he's a player to invest in a deep dynasty format. For this year, he sneaks inside the top 200, and that's probably where he sits, unless, you know, he's forced into bigger action because Oladipo's out, or because Westbrook's out, or because however they want to run it. He's not going to force his way into a huge role this season, but I really like, and I've said it plenty of times on this podcast before, that I really like what Payne can do. I think he can be a real top 50 asset within 3 years' time. I'm excited to see what he can do, and I think the Thunder got it was the absolute worst spot for him to go in the draft from a fantasy point of view, sitting behind Westbrook and Durant, but in terms of talent, he was one of the top fantasy producers, you know, on a per-minute basis to come out of last season's draft, and I still believe that'll be the case when he eventually gets that opportunity. Another guy that I'm excited about, Fred, Alex Abrines. I think his defense is going to be a concern, but you talk about a lack of three-point shooting on this team. He's a guy that's been a 40% three-point shooter for the last three seasons, I believe, at Barcelona. How do you see him fitting in, or is his defense just going to be so much of a concern that they're going to have to, you know, really limit what he does?
He's going to get an opportunity because he can shoot. That's the thing with this team, is I think Billy Donovan's basically going to give everyone an opportunity because he's just going to be in search for shooters. Anyone who has a history of possibly being a three-point shooter is going to get an opportunity to play, I think. So Abrines comes on. He shot like 43% playing in Barcelona last year and was really one of the best shooters in Europe in every single type of shot, whether you're talking about, you know, catch and shoot, out of the pick and roll, off the dribble, whatever it is. If you look at, you know, those synergy breakdown of his three-point shooting, he was one of the best three-point shooters, not just in Spanish League, but in all of Europe, in basically any type of three-point shot that you can take. And the Thunder are certainly excited about that. Now, there are other parts of his game which I just don't know if they're going to translate great to a guy who's just a rookie. I think he's going to be a solid NBA player. But I also think we have to realize, I think sometimes with guys who come over from playing in Europe, I think we sometimes think of them as, you know, like that they're like Ichiro or something. and you know, they're 27 years old and their game is honed and they're ready to come over. Like, Abrines is still a 22-year-old rookie right now. And I think we do have to have fair 22-year-old rookie expectations, which means I expect him to be in and out of the rotation all year. Now, if he's more consistent than I expect, then I'll admit that. But I just think with a rookie who isn't a top five pick, I think for the most part you have to expect the guy to be in and out of a rotation, learning how to play defense at the NBA level, learning how to deal with the game speed. I think he's where he presents the biggest positive for them is not just his shooting, but it's his ability to move off the ball and actually run off like pin downs and stuff to where they can find him for open threes. Because Anthony Morrow is a great three-point shooter, and Ilyasova is a solid three-point shooter, but Morrow's really a standalone catch-and-shoot guy. And Ilyasova can pick and pop, and he can catch and shoot, but you're not going to, like, run him off of a screen and, you know, run floppy sets with their son Ilyasova. You can do that with Alex Abrines. So that's not only a way for them to get three-point shooting, it's also a way for them to get some much-needed motion in their offense, which can help a lot with spacing beyond the three-point shooting and can just make a defense move, which will help a lot. So that could buy him some minutes, just his ability to do that because he's that type of player. But I do think he's probably going to end up being – there are going to be times where we're seeing him getting consistent playing time depending on the situation, and then there are going to be some times where we see him get some DMPs.
I think what you said about Morrow is accurate as well. Like, he's one of the best shooters that we've seen really in the NBA, but he just can't do it in multiple situations. His defense is atrocious. He doesn't handle the ball. He can't get himself open as well. And Abrines is a really, really good athlete. Like, he's a guy that can, you know, throw it down hard on breakaways, get up for alley-oops. He's an athletic guy. He's in the Mario Hezonja sort of mold rather than the Bojan Bogdanović European mold. He's a guy that flies around the court. He's quick. He's athletic. His defense needs work, but I think with his athleticism, he could be a guy that at some point, you know, averages 1.2, 1.3 steals a game just because of his athletic gifts and you know, some sort of anticipation. But it's not going to happen this season, as you mentioned. He's someone to look at long-term, but they're going to give him that opportunity. And I think that by the end of the season, he plays a more consistent role than Morrow just because of those limitations that we mentioned about Morrow. And we talked about Singler earlier, who's forgotten everything about basketball, which could bounce back, but the 1.5 seasons we've seen from him in Oklahoma City have been absolutely depressing from a basketball perspective, and it's totally confusing. So he's got that opportunity, and opportunity is key. One last player I want to touch on, Josh Huestis. Is there any hope for this guy to be a rotation NBA player?
You know, we haven't really seen it. The thing is with Josh is that he just hasn't been he hasn't hit his threes. Like, even in the D League, he's been a 31% 3-point shooter in the D League. And, you know, that's something that would have to change if he's going to play. Look, he's a wonderful athlete. He's got great bounce. He's a wing who can block shots, yep. Which from a fantasy perspective, that's amazing value. If you can get a wing who can block shots, I mean, that's rare. That's some really rare value that you can get on the fringe. And I think if he were ever get minutes, he would get that. But I just don't. I mean, look, maybe he sees the floor again because this team just doesn't have wings. Like, think of the names that we're talking about that provide wings. So maybe he gets his first real opportunity because they just had so much capital in Kevin Durant. He was really their only wing. Like, think about how long this team spent trying to get a shooting guard to put Kevin Durant, who could play defense and shoot threes, and they just couldn't do it. And now they're kind of in the position where they have that and they don't have Kevin Durant. So maybe Huestis finally gets an opportunity, which is something he's never gotten because his first year he contractually had to stay in the D League. And then this past year he only got into 5 NBA games while staying in the D League for most of the year in what was technically his rookie year. So maybe he finally gets his first NBA, you know, opportunity. But, you know, we just haven't seen it. We haven't seen it.
If they, look, as we mentioned earlier, they've got 16 contracts. If they don't make a trade, who's the guy that misses out?
Well, I think they will make a trade. I think in a worst case scenario, they just like, it's going to be a big, it has to be a big. So I think if they don't make like a huge trade, it's just going to be something like Mitch McGarry for a second round pick and another team takes him into cap space.
Okay.
And you know, just like a future second round pick or something like that, that's protected. And then they take McGarry into cap space and and hopefully try to take a risk on him. I think that's the simplest way. I'm sure you can pull off that deal with someone. That's an easy deal to make if you don't care about grappling over the protections for the second rounder, and whether it's one of those second rounders that just rolls over every year and never comes over or not, because they do need to get rid of someone because they got 16. There could be a bigger Canner trade up their sleeve. There could be a flipping Ilyasova, or maybe they know that another team out there loves Laverne and they're going to flip him, for all I know. This isn't anything I'm reporting. This is just, I'm thinking of the opportunities. But they've got seven bigs on the roster. And when you're short on guards and you're short on wings and you've got a surplus of bigs and you have an extra roster spot that you're over the limit in extra amount, like, you get rid of what you have the surplus of, and that's bigs in this scenario.
Bold prediction time, Fred. Have you got a bold prediction for this team? It can be phrased in any way that you want. You can make it record-wise, trade-wise, locker room confrontation-wise. It can be Fred Katz meme-worthy press conferences. What's your bold prediction for this team?
Oh, man. My unbold prediction is that I'm not going to refer to any of the athletes as Fred this year. That's my personal goal for the season. Okay, here's my bold prediction. By the end of this regular season, whether he's with the Thunder or not, Enes Kanter will be generally known around NBA circles as the best Twitter follow of any player in the NBA.
He's hilarious. His Twitter feed is fantastic. When Westbrook signed that extension, with that picture that he tweeted out with the Lakers was hilarious. He is very, very humorous, and you need to follow him on Twitter.
He's so funny. I don't even follow most players on Twitter, but he's hysterical. Did you see his Oladipo tweet after Durant left?
When he put the tape across the back of the jersey.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. He's had like three hilarious Durant tweets since Durant left, and like he's had a couple of great Westbrook runs. And him and Adams have an amazing rapport. Like, they're really close friends, and they have an incredible. You have to follow both him and Adams because then you can see their tweets at each other.
Yeah, they're Stash Brothers stuff, and they had those T-shirts that last year as well.
Yep, they're great. They're both. I mean, Adams is hilarious too, but I think everyone knows that Stephen Adams is hilarious at this point. And I think with Kanter, some of like the sting from Utah kind of carried over to him here in Oklahoma, and I think that's going to go away this year. I think because he's a good guy to cover, and he's really, really funny, and I think he's going to be the best, the go-to NBA player follow among NBA fans by the end of this year.
Yeah, I enjoy that prediction. I think he's definitely right up there. You've got a great team to cover here. You've got Kanter, you've got Adams, you've got Westbrook, who can be humorous, he can be pissy, he can be any number of things. But there's definitely no lack of interest in what's going to be happening with the Thunder. Fred, thanks for coming on. What have you got coming up on Locked On Thunder or over at the blog for the Norman Transcript, Thunder Road?
Yeah, so up on Thunder Road, I've got up a couple of pieces just on one from Tuesday on what did I write on? On offensive rebounding and how good of an offensive rebounding team this could be. One, a follow-up to that from Wednesday, which is about kind of how, if they're so aggressive in pursuing offensive rebounds, then what's that going to say about their transition defense this year, and how's that going to mesh with a team that's really going to be defensive minded? Got another piece up on Westbrook going up on Thursday. And then just lots of Thunder coverage, and I'll be starting on season preview stuff in a couple of weeks. And Locked On Thunder, I'm going to be starting on. I've been doing on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then I'll be back to the daily model. I guess in a couple of weeks. Season starts real soon.
Yeah, we're not too far away. Where can everyone find you on Twitter, Fred, so they can follow all of your stuff?
On Twitter, I'm Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. And, you can just go to normantranscript.com. Just find my stuff there. It's head to Thunder Road. That's my blog. It's under the sports tab on normantranscript.com, so you can find it right there.
Yep, check that out. I just read last night that the piece you had on the offensive rebounding, and it was really informative, so I do recommend everyone checks that out and listens to Locked On Thunder, subscribes to it, subscribe to this podcast, and give us both 5-star reviews, and say whatever, say something nice, say something constructive, say whatever, just give it the 5 stars. That's the most important thing. Fred, thank you once again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.